This is Mary Flynn, and I'm talking to Richard Carline at the Blackbird office at Virginia Commonwealth University. Richard Carline appears in the gallery section of Blackbird with his video piece, Flight Song. Richard, because most people are not going to know exactly what the origin of Flight Song was, if you could talk maybe a little bit about the connection to John Cage and how you created the piece, that would probably be helpful.
When John Cage passed away in 1992, just a few weeks before his 80th birthday, I knew that I wanted to do something and a kind of homage to him. For a long time, I had followed his activities as a composer, as a writer, as a performer, as a poet, as a humorist, and certainly his various activities with sound and noise. And I initially thought of doing something, some kind of construction that might include sound and objects and paint. But that seemed fixed. And when I think of John Cage, I think of something that's fluid, porous, open. He's not working for closure, he's working for openness. That's the sense I have of him as a person and as an artist. And one day, this wasn't in my mind at all, I was walking up the staircase in the Art Foundation building at the VCU campus, and I was the only person in the building. Classes were closed. It was in the break between the end of the spring term and before the summer session began. And as I ascended the staircase, once I got to the top of it, after I'd ascended it, and I started to walk down the hall, I heard the echo of the creak of the steps was in my head. And I thought, that's it. This was non-intended. It's something that everybody does every day of the week, walk up and down a flight of steps. Don't pay any attention to it. But if you isolate the sound in it, you're actually creating, according to Cage, it could be thought of as musical. So I decided to do a video. And initially I thought of engaging someone to walk up and down the steps and I would record it. But then I was afraid I'd get arty with it. I'd start thinking about the composition of the picture, of the image of the person. So I decided to do it myself and just put the camera on a tripod, fix the focus so it did cover the stairway, and I would just walk up and down the steps for a half hour, which is what I did. And then I didn't want it to be a portrait, so I didn't want my facial features to show in any way. And I decided to wear a black linen suit. I was bare-chested, but I had a black linen suit and was in my bare feet. And the reason I'm in my bare feet is because I didn't want the image to convey that the weight of my shoes was making this sound, you know, that I was stamping, in other words, that I was stamping on the steps. So I set the camera up and I just walked up and down the stairs and I had a half hour tape. Then I went to the video lab and I edited out all the images of my walking down the steps. In other words, I just kept the ones of ascending the steps. And once I had that was my master tape. I then decided, in the spirit of Cage, to use a chance-determined structure to compose the piece. And using a simple arithmetical system, I determined, first of all, how long would this piece be? And it came out 5 minutes and, I think, 30 seconds, or 33 seconds. Then I determined at what point in the 30-minute tape, well, it was actually down to about 16 minutes after I edited out the descending, at what point within that 16 minutes would I enter the tape? Once I found that point on the editor, then how long, what would be the duration? How long will this run? Would it be 1 second, 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever? That was all determined by chance. Then I asked myself, is this to be repeated, yes or no? And that was determined by chance. If it was yes, then how many times is it to be repeated? And if no, I just would go on to the next entry point. And I worked on this for about a year and a half. And when I completed it, it came out exactly the 5 minutes and 30 seconds. But when I edited it, I had the soundboard on, of course, but I didn't listen to it. I turned the volume down because I didn't want to be influenced by it. So I just paid attention to these dials on the editor. And when I completed the assignment I gave myself, then I played it. So the play between the image of this man's body walking up a staircase and the various creaks and sounds that are occurring from the weight of the body as it hits these steps going up created the piece, and I felt that it was a appropriate homage to John Cage.
Now, when I was at Holland's in the late 60s, he came through with Merce Cunningham and composed a piece for the Holland's Caroline by connecting the knots on a board. But I also think of his long connection with Cunningham and your interest in dance as well. And Cunningham also used chance determined kinds of work.
Yes.
And chance determined work is certainly a part of your aesthetic as well. I wondered if you would speak to that a little bit, how that interested you and why that's sort of where you go.
Well, it's interested me from the very time that I entered the fine arts department at RPI, now VCU, in 1950. And that's when I discovered John Cage. I mean, by accident, I discovered him. I was at McCorley's, I think it was called Corley's Music Shop down on Gray Street. And they had a bin of records that were marked down. They were 50 cents for an LP. That was the bin I always went to. And I saw two albums. All it said was John Cage, prepared piano. I never heard of John Cage, and I didn't know what a prepared piano was. And I bought both. There were two albums. I bought both of them. And from that point on, I got interested in him and his work, and then I found out, of course, that he used chance-determined structures for most of his activities from the late 40s on up until the time of his death. At that time, I never heard anyone talk about John Cage. It was difficult to find information about him in libraries and so forth. There were very few recordings of his music at that time. And when I spoke to the head of the music department here at VCU, I sought him out and asked him about John Cage. And he said, he's a joke. He can't be taken seriously. He said, have you heard his music? And I said, well, just prepared piano. And he said, well, that's a joke. He said, he's altered the piano. And I said, but isn't that interesting? Because if you listen to the recording, it doesn't sound like a piano. It sounds like some instruments that you're not familiar with. And everything, the stress in my education, and for others as well, I think it was pretty general throughout the United States at that time, was on a sound formal composition, that no matter what subject you use for painting or sculpture, one went to some sort of a final formal resolution and clarity. One worked for kind of, to quote Matisse, a kind of condensation of sensations brought to some sort of pure statement. And so that was the stress. I mean, that was the emphasis. But in the back of my mind, all those years, and for decades following it, was this example of John Cage, as you mentioned, Merce Cunningham. And as I moved into my late 50s and 60s, I found myself more and more engaged with this because it's a way of getting away from habits. It's a way of challenging neat patterns of thinking. You can begin to make discoveries. It's like a hunter, someone hunting for information. You look for one thing, but you find something else, which is much richer, much more interesting and engaging than what you thought you were looking for. And so I tried, initially through collage, to introduce this factor, this process, into my work. And slowly, over the years, it's sort of taken over. It gets back to something, too, that John Cage said. He said that he thought that art is not an escape from life or an embellishment of it, but rather an introduction to it. In other words, you can use all of your experience, all of it. And the emphasis is on experience as opposed to understanding. I mean, if you make a kind of distinction there. The experiencing mind, according to John Cage, is a mind that's delighted and enhanced when anything comes into it that isn't within the realm of its imagination. In other words, the emphasis is on discovery. So I have tried to find ways to draw upon the knowledge and experience I have and put it in a situation where I'm not sure what's going to come out. And in my case anyway, when something is produced using these various kinds of chance structures, you can accept or reject it when it's over, but you cannot, and there is an ethic, you cannot fool around with it. It has to be established a priori. And once it's in operation, you have to follow the assignment you gave yourself. And then it comes out. And then you have an ethical decision. Am I going to keep this? Or am I going to throw it away because it was a dumb structure? I didn't use interesting materials, or it was faulty, and it's from the inception, and you just throw it away. But there's no sense of loss because you've learned something from it. You're not going to do that again. And I found that it connects to so many different areas of experience. I mean, it's not just art, in the best sense. I'm using the word art in the best sense, but to things that happen in everyday life that one can observe. I mean, you can walk down a street through a large cosmopolitan area, and all you're thinking about, I want to get from this block to the next block or whatever. But you can also walk down that and start to notice the rhythms with which people move. The mechanism is the same for everyone. Walking, the mechanism is the same. But the rhythms in which it's performed, there's all this wonderful variety to it. And you feel part of it. You actually begin to feel part of it. And so it's not you alone walking down the street. Everybody's creating this rhythm, whether they're paying attention to it or not, and it's unselfconscious. You can just walk down the street. And if you pay attention to it, it's delightful.
Now, but you said that probably this way of dealing with experience in art goes back more to somebody like Marcel Duchamp in terms of looking at how art can look at experience and deal with it.
I think so.
Thinking of somebody like Hans Hallmann.
Oh, definitely. And there is a connection, I think, between Cage and Cunningham and Marcel Duchamp. Any chance he had, John Cage would acknowledge that he owed a great deal to the example of Duchamp. And I think it's largely through Cage that Duchamp's ideas became palpable to artists here in America, particularly during the 1960s. All of a sudden, Picasso wasn't the most relevant artist for painters, for example, or Brancusi for sculptors, but it was Duchamp. Because it's in Duchamp's view that art is undefinable. He didn't call himself an anti-artist because he was never against anything. He said he wasn't like an atheist. An atheist believes negatively. And Duchamp said, I don't believe negatively. I just don't believe in art, period. So he called himself a non-art. But there's a trick there, of course. but I do think there is a connection. And the fact that Duchamp used chance operations in some of his work, in the large glass, and a musical score he wrote, and in other pieces as well. But I think Cage has a peculiarly American character, perhaps. I mean, he's from California, grew up in California, and he had sort of a sunny disposition. And he just had this very open, curious, welcoming mind and imagination. And I think it's been a great loss that he's gone. To me, the 20th century died with Cage.